And if I sit and hang out, I sit and hang out, and it's all part of the sadhana. But I don't mean that as a cop-out. I mean that as a reminder that what you are doing, what your definition is, and what your work is an inner work, and the outer form is not by in and of itself defined, prescribed, in such a rigid sense that you can say, look, I only got to do this and the hell with it all, the rest. Because the fact that becomes immediately apparent as you explore what the meaning of karma is that if in the course of your journey through your sadhana, you have left behind you a mass of frayed edges, of bad thoughts, of bad vibrations, that is your karma, baby. And that's what you're stuck with. And you don't go through the final door till it's all straight. Till it's all straight. You must have made peace in your heart and your mind with every being in the universe before you're free. Now that doesn't mean it doesn't have to be a face-to-face matter. It may be inside yourself. People say to me, what is your program? What's your job? What is your plan? What part are you playing? How is it unfolding? And I realize that just as it is with social institutions, that the statement of a social institution is the kind of calcification that allows, that keeps you from being in the here and now, the minute you are an institution or define yourself as an institution. Because the minute you are, say, I am a teacher, then in a human relationship you can't be a student. The minute you define any particular social role as what you are or how it's going to be, it immediately starts to limit the flexibility and the fluidity of the here and now. And furthermore, I saw that that limit made me impatient with other people. Well, I've got a plan and you don't fit in. Sorry, I can't print labels. That isn't going to get the spiritual nature of the universe changed. And I've been assigned the task of, sorry, I wish I had time to print labels with you, Dad, but maybe next lifetime, because I've got an important spiritual task. Whew. Boy. Pretty heavy. Now, maybe some of you have been visited astrally and have had very specific instructions given to you as to what specifically you are to do, and you that instruction is so strong for you that there's not a chance that you can do anything else, and that's that. But for most of us, our plans are pretty much products of our own intellect. And then the intellect starts to cut us off from the here and now. Because in the here and now, there was a human being who was in the role of a father, and he had some labels to be printed. When you read Ramakrishna, the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, you see Ramakrishna getting all involved in the most trivial details. Who'll pay the taxi fare? Did this person have enough blanket that night? How is the stomach from yesterday? And you thought, well, aren't there people around to do that? And couldn't he just go on being a holy man? And then you understood that teaching is being, and that being is every relationship you have with everybody, and that doesn't exempt anything at any time. You can't say, well, I'll be high with you because you're a high being, and the rest of you, the hell with you, I can't bother, be bothered. I mean, after all, I know you're my family, but after all, that was just a mistake of something, and I must hang out with the people who understand, because I'm a tender little tree, and I must be surrounded by holy beings, and you're not holy enough for me. Hit me again. Hit him again. Doesn't make it. You see the flaw in it? See the flaw in it? You can't step over human beings to help humanity. You can't win that. It doesn't work that way. You just get caught in your own karma. You get caught in the spin-off of your own ego, of your own intellect. Now, when I dug that if I said to Dad, no, I won't print your raspberry jam labels, and then went back to my cabin to do sadhana, much of the consciousness that I would do with my sadhana was concerned with the hurt I had created and the distance I had created between us. I think you'll have to sit outside with the dog. And I realize that the way the game works is that you start with the here and now, with exactly what the here and now is. If the here and now includes family, it's family. If it includes friends, it's friends. If it includes job, it's job. If it includes school, it's school. If it includes skills, it's skills. If it includes desires, it's desires. If it includes whatever. And you got to say, all right, let's. What is this now? What do we have? What is the existential situation? What is the existential situation? What's given? What are the givens? And within that, that is the first definition of your sadhana. That's your field. That's your field.
How is it that Ramakrishna often advised devotees to come despite their parents' disapproval? And also, he often used the analogy of a young tree with a fence around it to protect it from the cattle. And then afterwards, you could take the fence down. And
the answer to that will come clear as the plot thickens. It's in the computer. If I short-circuit the sequence, it comes out weird. I feel it's in there, though, somewhere. See, the existential situation from moment to moment is here I am in an ashram, here I am in an automobile, here I am on a city street, here I am at a meal with friends, here I am studying for this course, here I am hanging out smoking pot, here I am making a pot on a wheel. Each thing, here I am, this is it, this is what it is all about right now. Within that, what is sadhana? Well, sadhana is finding the way inside to keep a center and to deepen the center through everything that is coming in through your senses and your thoughts through every moment. And you can ask the question, did this experience or incident leave me with more energy, more free energy? Did it put me more into the spirit? Did it leave me lighter? Did it leave me freer, internally freer, than I was before? And if it didn't, and you say, wow, that's really a downer, man, then you are merely describing the degree of your own attachment or identification to the thing which brought you down. You're talking about your own head. You're talking about what you see in New York City. You're talking about the pull of your own desires that got fanned by that place. That's what you're talking about. And if you are going to be tough with yourself, if you're able at this point to jump in, or if you must jump in, then your upaya or your path or your method is to take all of the abrasive experiences and work with them directly in order to generate that energy to free you further. And that comes first of all through the definition that from now on, for the rest of this lifetime, if anybody asks, or if I ask myself, what is it you do? What are you? Who are you? I am somebody doing sadhana. I am somebody on the path. I am a spiritual seeker. That's what I am about. And the minute you get to the point where you define to yourself, now you don't have to say that to somebody else. I mean, you don't have to running around saying, I am a spiritual seeker. I am a spiritual seeker. Because that you can use that like a whip. But you have to very clearly have defined that to yourself. You've got to define who you are and what you're about. In other words, you must define your own self in sacred terms. That is, you are in the process of unfolding the spirit, of coming to the light. That's what you are about. And then everything that happens to you is part of that drama. The minute you identify with that, as they say, you're going to get rid of all attachments, but the last attachment to get rid of is the attachment for enlightenment. And so when that's strong, you're defining yourself as someone who is seeking the light. That's the strongest desire you finally have, to get finished with all the attachment, with all the desire, with all the pulls, with all of the personality heaviness, with all of the... So you say, I am somebody to yourself who does sadhana. And I say to yourself, because just as Ramakrishna says, a genuine holy being says his prayers behind his mosquito curtain so that everybody outside says, gee, he sleeps late. You don't sit in the town square and say, oh, that's a trip, but it's a trip. It's, you know, it's a social prayer. The weepers and the wailers. Right? And you will see the power of your own desire when you see what it is you do when you're all alone. I mean, I'm not at all sorry that this place closes next Tuesday, for obviously many reasons, but one of them is, I mean, I'm not sorry from everybody's point of view that's here, because very clearly what everybody is going to do is be cast into a new environment where they will get a chance to observe how strong their inner pull is towards the light. Some people can do very well when they are in the protected environment where meditation's at 6 and meditation in the evening's at 7:30 and there's darshan and all you got to do is fall into it practically. And there's nothing else much to do anyway. And you do have a desire and it's really nice to have these beautiful people around. It's so pretty nice and easy. Now, what I suggest to you, and this is now an answer to Jim's point, is that you consider your journey more in the sense of cycles and see yourself going in and out, because at this moment most of the people here are not ready to go into a monastic life, nor will they probably ever be, nor is that probably the suitable model even for most of the people. On the other hand, that does not preclude living a life totally in the spirit. Now the question is, how does that emerge? How does the peculiar journey that is to be your thing emerge? Well, it emerges from starting from the here and now and watching it unfold. Because any model you have in your head is the wrong one. I'm going back to New York and I'm going to get a room and I'm going to sit in it, I'm going to light my candle and my incense and I'm just going to sing holy songs. Right? And you're driving down in the train and you sit down next to an old man who has garlic on his breath. And he's got a funny newspaper and it turns out that he happens to be a realized being, see? But who can see him? I mean, he's like, you know, I got to get to my room to get holy. You wouldn't know him if you fell over him. Because you're not open to that possibility, because your mind has created the model of how it's going to be. It's a very, very, very delicate line that I'm suggesting that we must walk. Because what I'm saying is that once the seed is planted, once one understands about the light, and one understands about the spirit, and one understands about the unfolding, just like me, you will go and up and down and under like you never thought you'd go under again. But there'll be a place in you that'll say, my God, I'm under deeper than I ever thought I'd go under again. And who's that? Is that somebody that's under? And if you allow it to happen, you will see that your life will proceed at this point in the West, realistically, in a certain kind of set of cycles. That is, you'll come into a scene like this for a period of time, which is that protected environment, and you'll develop a certain kind of center, and then because you are a Westerner living in a Western world with a set of attachments and a certain set of desires and a certain kind of intellect, you will now go back into another kind of stream, and you will do another kind of sadhana. And that will feed new information in, and then out of that will come the next one, and the next one may be one like this, or it might be another kind. In Lama, we've been trying to design a school of the spirit. We've been thinking through models of a school of the spirit. And what it boils down to at this moment is designing the possibility for people to go into four different environments where we can provide those options for that movement so that a person spends some time in a commune doing karma yoga. They spend some time in a monastic. And the calmer you are, and the less you identify with the person who makes the response, the more the optimum response will be made. That's the, this is the paradoxical part of it. The more you think you are making the response, like I have important decisions to make, just that stance, that position, is a trap. Much more is, wow, I wonder how this is going to come out. You become the witness of the decisions, you become the witness of the actions, you become the witness of the achievements, you become the witness of it all. That's the place you sit. And as you get in deeper and deeper and deeper, you hear more and more and more. You hear how it is, and you see that the optimum thing will do it all. You see, I can make a plan. This is the way this thing works. I can sit down and say, well, now when I come back, in order to keep my father happy, I will have to spend X number of hours sharing time and space with him. But the fact of the matter is that if I am here with him for one moment, in an eternal moment, we have done the thing we need to do. And he knows it, and I know it, and then I can go away. And I know that if I sit being with him because I've said I'll be with him for 6 hours, I can be with him for all those 6 hours, and at the end of the sixth hour, it's not enough. And he says, do you have an extra hour? And he creates the same guilt in me that I'm not giving him enough. And if along the course of any of those 6 hours, I will give up my model that I'm spending 6 hours with him and be here for this one moment, we have enough. And it was all different than I predicted it would be. And then he'll say, gee, you've got your own work to do. Why don't you go do it? So when I come to see him, if he's doing wallpaper, I come upstairs and my full consciousness is right there in his hand moving down that wallpaper. And here we are, and we are in this process at this moment. And if it only is 30 seconds, it's 30 seconds, but it's 30 seconds of full here-ness, out of which I am totally involved in the wallpapering and I can see the bucket out of the corner of my eye and so on, and I'll say, I see how it all is, and I'll say, gee, those buckets are really working out well. And I'm right in the middle of his consciousness at that moment. And that's what he wanted. He wanted me to share that inner place with him. And then it's enough. It's enough. So the whole model of how much time or where I should be or what's good for my relations with this person or that person, all of the planning you'll sit doing about it, sitting in your tent, has nothing to do with the existential fact that when you sit down opposite a person and look into their eyes and come right into the here and now, this is it. And if you are here and now enough at every moment, it's always enough. Whatever you're doing is always enough. It'll always be enough. But it takes a degree of faith. It takes a degree of faith. The whole intellectual overlay that we have on life is that it's not going to be enough. Boy, if you'll just live in the here now, the rest of it's going to go to hell, I'll tell you. Like I used to plan to go somewhere, and then I'd get all involved in something because... See, I'd say, I'll be with a person from 6 to 7, and then I've got to be at this place at 7:30, and it'll take me 20 minutes to drive this, so I've got to leave here by 7:10. And then at 7:10, the person is still saying, but, you know, they're still pulling, because I've been busy there being ready to leave at 7:10, okay, at that place. So then I, in response to that pull in them, I stay till 7:15. So then I'm not going to get to the next place till 7:35. So all the time I'm on the way, I'm building up the guilt that I'm going to be late, that I am doing a hostile act to the next person because I don't respect them enough to be on time. So then I get into them, and I'm busy with my consciousness over this past situation. Did you ever be in, with somebody that carries that to the extreme, where they spend the whole hour you're with them apologizing for having been 5 minutes late? The fact of the matter is, if you're 10 hours late, when you walk in, if you are right here, that's what it's all about. I told last night as we sat around the fire, and it's just such a far-out story, but I can tell you where your head is at and how delicate this whole process is. I told about the committee story, about getting too high one night before I took LSD on the beach, and I had to deliver a speech at a question and answer program at the committee in San Francisco. It's a nightclub. And I got there, and there were 350 people out there, and I stood up on the lecture thing, and I looked out, and there was like only one person out there. I mean, it was all like, yeah, you know, I was in that wild, liquid place. And the first guy that stood up was with tie and vest and jacket, and he was a scientist, and he asked me a very super scientist question, like, what are the psychotherapeutic implications of psychotropic ingestions, and what are the synaptic changes that are, you know. And I looked at him, and all I saw was this being saying, do you love me enough? Do you love me enough? He wanted to capture consciousness, because I knew at that moment he couldn't use that information. It was completely, really irrelevant to his life. And so I looked at him, and I looked at him, and with all of my heart, I said to him, I love you. And we looked at each other, and looked at each other, and looked at each other, and he said, that does not satisfy me at all. So then I spent the next 15 minutes desperately, you know, reaching for a conceptual support to find an answer to him. And I answered and answered and answered, and he kept sitting like that. And I answered and answered that, and he kept sitting like that. See, it's just like that. You can't come on to people. I mean, what was happening, all I'm telling you about was my own impurity. My own impurity that I wasn't really processing all the data. See? What had happened was I had taken the acid which would put me at a certain astral plane where I saw who he was behind the other one he was, but I didn't accept the other one also. I didn't live at all the levels simultaneously. And dispassionate non-attachment means dispassionate non-attachment to even the level. So that I can sit here talking to you with great intensity, giving you models and ideas at the same moment as the utter and total absurdity of this whole predicament is totally evident to me. At the same moment, I realize that what our communication is a communication directly in the spirit, and that these words are birds, and they're just flying by. And I know that too. And that my particular musical instrument is words. And I can go one level out, and I can also see that this never happened. And that what I talk about in your future has already occurred. I know that too. And every minute in every dance I'm doing, I'm seeing all these things simultaneously. And the quieter I am and the less I am attached, the more of these I see all the time, the more they are all present every single moment with every breath. And then how can your response be anything but optimum? Because at every level you're tuned in. And you see exactly what the response is at that moment. People say, well, when you get... See, there is an interesting phenomenon we've had. We've had some people getting very ecstatic. And when they get very ecstatic, they get kind of sloppy in their game playing. The other evening, we were going to church, I asked Jeff to drive me in, and Jeff was in a state of something or other, and when we got to the church, there he was without shoes. And I said, I was obviously displeased, turning that cold, rejecting thing that I learned at my mother's knee. And he was into, he was doing the Ramakrishna trip. And I said, that's no excuse. That's no excuse. Maybe my demand is too high for me and everyone else, but I think that every level is here. And anytime you're at just one level, it's not enough. Get on with it. And if you're just in total bliss, that's groovy, that's level 4. You enjoy it, but here we are. Man, total bliss, but the toast is burning. Who can concern himself about the toast when it's all God? Yeah, but you, in about 5 minutes, you're going to eat it, I'll tell you, and it's going to be burnt, and you're not going to like it at all. I'll tell you that right now. Oh, you cynic. Oh, you cynic. No, man, there's a much higher place than just pure ecstasy. I mean, this is a totally, very, very, it's not totally, but it's a very highly ecstatic moment for me being here. I can say that almost every moment of the day, even when I'm really uptight and yelling at people and hung up and it's still ecstatic. It's like, wow, look at how hung up. Ooh, wow, look at that one. It's like seeing lions come leaping across the arena, you know. Ooh, you are scary. It's inside. Oh. And all the time, outside is going on the dance, which is that level.